the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, I'm sure by now you're aware that a major tax bill has gone into effect this year. But are you aware of all of its provisions? Joining me on the program is Chris Hennessy from Putnam Investments. And Chris, let's begin with just the broad scope of this tax bill, because we haven't seen anything of this magnitude since the Tax Reform Act of 1986. I don't think people are aware of how encompassing and how many areas of the tax code this bill touched.
Yeah, Jim. So it is clearly probably the largest reduction in corporate rates in history. It is not overall the largest reduction. Probably the largest tax bill was 86, but it is very broad. It's also interesting to note that all of the individual changes and all of the estate and gift tax changes will sunset at the end of 2025. And now any ranking Republican will tell you, oh, yes, but we're going to make all that permanent law by then. Good luck. They need, I think, now 9 votes in the U.S. Senate to do so from Democrats. But it is, as you indicated, it is very significant. And a lot of people, unless they pay attention to it, are going to pay too much money into the government during calendar year 2018 and then get a big refund, which you never want to do because they don't give you interest on the refund, they being the Treasury.
You know, something that really strikes me, not only how broad this bill and how many areas it touches of the tax code, but the one thing I don't like is that, yes, the tax rates went down, but a lot of deductions were done away with, and this bill sunsets after 2025.
Right. So on the deduction side, obviously the big controversial issue is so-called SALT. SALT is state and local tax deduction. So, for example, in your California area, where the top tax rate is 13.3%, last year, 2017, you could take whatever your state of California taxes were, your property taxes on a first and or second home, and they're fully deductible. This year, that amount, let's say last year was $60,000, Jim, this year it's going to be capped at a flat $10,000. So that negatively impacts a lot of folks, primarily living in so-called blue states. And as you just said, but when we go to 2026, we'll revert to where we were last year. So unless something happens between then and now legislatively, all this stuff will be fully deductible again in 2026.
You know, let's go over some of those tax bills, and beginning with single taxpayers. Of all the brackets, there were actually two that went up if you were single. The normal 28% bracket went up to 32, and the 33% bracket went up to 35.
Right. And then two are unchanged. One of them actually went down by 4.6. And that's also what you're pointing out, Jim, was true on the joint schedule, married filing jointly, where the top rate is now 37%, down from 39.6. But there was one bracket, it's kind of narrow bracket, that actually went up by 2%. And one bracket went down by 9%. So it kind of jumps all over the place. But overall, the rates are down.
I want to talk about something that many investors are unaware of, Chris, and that's capital gains and qualified dividends. It did not change. And most people don't realize, for example, as a single individual, the first almost $38,600 of dividends and capital gains, you pay zero taxes. And for a married couple, it's $77,200. I mean, that's almost like getting tax-free municipal bond income.
Yes, exactly right. So the only thing they did with capital gains, really 2 points, Jim. One, last year they keyed in your capital gains rate to your marginal tax rate, meaning if you were in the top marginal rate of 39.6%, you were in the top capital gains rate. This year they did it a little differently. They keyed it in based on your income levels, as you just indicated. And the other thing that's interesting is the Medicare surtax, which we've talked about in the past on the show, of 3.8% is still with us. So if you're impacted by that, and you got to remember, you are only impacted by that if you're over $200,000 of income on a single return or $250,000 on a married return, then you add 3.8% to whatever your capital gains dividend rate is.
So you almost have four brackets for capital gains. You have the zero bracket, the 15% bracket, the 20%, and what I call the 23.8%, which brings in the Obamacare tax.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So it seems like it got a little bit more complicated than simplified.
Yeah, it's funny because President Trump said two things. He said, this is the biggest tax cut in history. Well, it depends on how you count, really. But he also said H&R Block would be out of business. I don't think so.
No way. No way.
I do agree that more people are going to take the standard deduction than ever before, probably 90, 95% of all taxpayers. But I don't think H&R Block will suffer too much, nor will any of the other tax return preparing companies.
Now, let's talk about deductions, because this is the one that really concerns me. They did increase and doubled the standard deduction from $12,000 to $24,000, $6,000 to $12,000 for a single, and then $1,300 for elderly or blind. So there's a little bit more than that. But they also got rid of personal exemptions. So what were they, Chris? I think close to over $4,000?
$4,050 was the number, yep.
So for a family of four, that was $16,000.
Correct. Now, interestingly, though, that's kind of replaced by an increased child tax credit. So there's always been this credit in the law. It used to be $1,000 for qualifying children, and that's normally for children that are under the age of 17. But they doubled that to $2,000. So that supposedly makes up for the loss of this $4,050 exemption. But even more importantly, a lot of people never got that credit because their income was too high. It used to be if you're over $110,000 of income, joint or $75,000, you weren't going to get the credit. But now they've taken those numbers and they pushed them way up. You're going to get the credit fully unless you're over $400,000 of income, joint return, $200,000 single. So the credit's more valuable because it's a dollar-for-dollar reduction of your tax liability than a deduction. With your deduction, your savings is the deduction amount times your marginal tax rate. So that's the argument that, oh boy, we got a big child tax credit now. And you know what, Jim? I think that that would be one area that even the Democrats would agree, let's make that permanent, because that's going to help a lot of middle to lower income families, that child tax credit.
I want to talk about some of the other deductions they did away with. And I was really surprised, Chris, to see all of this get through, especially with the real estate lobby and how important home ownership is. They limited the deductibility of interest to a $750,000 mortgage, where before it was $1 million. They got rid of the home equity line of credit, which used to be up to $100,000. They capped property taxes to $10,000, which I suppose if you're in the Midwest, that's still a lot of money. But in California, New York, and New Jersey, it's nothing. So let's talk about the impact of this on real estate.
Yeah, sure. So I think a couple of things, just to clarify a couple of points, because the media has kind of misreported this. The mortgage interest deduction is now capped at $750,000, but existing debt is grandfathered. So if I got $1 million loan from before, from last year, the year before, I'm grandfathered unless I finance into a new loan. And although it's been widely reported that home equity lines are no longer deductible, that's not true either. Depends on how you use the proceeds. So if I were to take out a home equity line and I go out and I buy a new Tesla or I pay off credit card debt, non-deductible. But if I use that money for my home, prove my home, put a new family room on, put in the garage on, it's still fully deductible. And yes, you're right, the property tax deduction is capped at $10,000 along with state income tax deduction. So there was a lot of press around from the industry trade groups in the real estate industry, and it may have an impact on values. I think more of the impact on values is going to be the rising mortgage interest rate, because rather than these particular deductions we're speaking about.
One thing they did improve is they reduced the threshold for medical expenses. They thought they were going to eliminate it. And it used to be 10% of your adjusted gross income. They dropped it down to 7.5%. So I guess that does help, especially for retirees and those individuals that are, you know, are pretty sick and they have large medical expenses.
Yes. And, you know, one thing retirees should be thinking about, because often they don't have much or any debt. They're really going to end up with only two deductions, charity. They might get medical, but they're primarily going to end up with charity and the cap of $10,000. So often those two numbers are less than the standard amount of $24,000. And what they want to try to do is time their deductions in a way to get over the $24,000. So the one deduction that's easy to time is charity. So this is called bunching. In other words, if I'm giving $10,000 a year away to charity, or I have my $10,000 self property tax deduction, that's 20. Well, I'll take the $24,000. Better way to do it, double up on charity next year. Give charity zero this year. So this year I take my $24,000 amount. Next year, double up on charity. Give charity $20,000 and I have my $10,000 property tax deduction. That's 30. I'm going to deduct 30, not 24. So you can time charity. You can also kind of time medical, but that's medical that's unreimbursed from insurance, Jim, health insurance.
I want to go on and talk about the AMT tax. They basically retained it. But does it really impact as many individuals? Because a lot of things that went into the AMT were a lot of things they got rid of, which was the itemized deductions.
Right. So AMT, put this in perspective, last year, 2017 calendar year, will impact 5 million Americans. This year, 200,000. It's, for all practical intents and purposes, gone. Now, there's two reasons for that. One, most of the deductions that caused AMT are gone anyway. What caused AMT? Personal exemption deduction, we talked about earlier. Deduction for state and local taxes. Those are gone anyway. And the second thing they did with AMT is they dramatically increased the exemption amount. Think about, the listeners should think about the exemption amount as a deduction against the AMT tax. That's dramatically increased. And the phase out of that amount is also increased. So a lot of people will never pay AMT again, at least for now.
Okay, I want to move on to a couple other things that came in. Is they got rid of, number one, the Pease Amendment. And for anybody that's not familiar with that, that was 3% of your adjusted gross income, and they would subtract it from your itemized deductions. So they got rid of that. They did not put in the FIFO for capital gains taxes. But let's talk about a couple things they did change, or at least improve. One was the 529 college plans, which utilize up to $10,000 on these 529 plans. That's certainly a lot better. But two negatives that they added, Chris, was one, the annual inflation adjustment to basically taxes. They're using a different CPI, which will result in lower increases in the brackets. And then also, they got rid of alimony payments as deductible.
Right. Well, be clear on this. Alimony is no longer deductible effective next year, 2019. So as long as your divorce is finalized before next year, your grandfather needs to be able to deduct alimony. And be careful if you're already divorced, have an existing agreement, about amending that agreement after this year. That's an open question as to whether or not you'd be grandfathered or not. And, you know, the inflation thing, I don't know how significant it is. I haven't really looked at the difference in numbers, but they're obviously doing that because based on this chain CPI versus standard CPI, it generally is resulting in lower inflation figure. That also is significant in the sense that that would, you know, I mean, think about Social Security increases, it would impact that also.
Yeah, you could end up essentially paying more taxes when you consider inflation. And of course, your benefits coming from Social Security is going to impact. Let's move on to something that basically eliminated estate taxes for, I would say, the bulk of Americans. They increased the exemption from, what was it, $5,450,000 to $11,200,000. So husband and wife, Chris, can pass on $22,400,000 without any estate tax.
That's exactly right. Now, the caution I'm telling everyone is, don't forget, that number expires at the end of 2025. And to put it in perspective, Jim, there will only be about 4,600 people in this country dying this year with an estate greater than 11.2 million. So all intents and purposes, the estate tax is gone. However, when we go into 2026, the number will be last year's number, 2017's number, indexed for inflation. So it'll probably be around $6 million a person. So if you're thinking about estate planning, think about a $6 million number or $12 million married, not $11.2 million number, which is roughly $23 million married.
Would it make sense? Let's say I'm Larry Lotsabucks. I have, I don't know, $20 million worth of assets. So I'm married. If I set up a living trust, I can shelter $22 million. But as you mentioned, Chris, 2025, this gets sunsetted, and who knows what we're going to be dealing with back then. It reminds me of the year 2010 when the Bush exemptions expired, and, you know, nobody knew what to do that year. In fact, I think that was the only year what we had no estate tax, because I remember George Steinbrenner passed away and ended up paying no estate tax. So would it make sense if I had a $20 million estate that I might want to take advantage of that $11,200,000 exemption, put it into an irrevocable trust now to get it out of my estate? So if they do change their mind in 2025, or let's say another administration comes in the year 2020 and decides to put back the estate tax, that I would be grandfathered.
Yes, it will. And a lot of people probably with that type of wealth have probably already done at least $5 million of gifting into an irrevocable trust. So now the number used to be 5 index for inflation. Now it's 11. So you got another $6 million to go. So you definitely should make another $6 million gift. So you come up to your 11. And of course, a married couple, you're just kind of doubling the numbers that I'm mentioning to you.
So technically, you could give that away now.
Absolutely right. You know, the way I would think about this is we're in calendar year 2018 now. You have a 7-year window of planning here, 2018 through 2025. Now, there is some political risk, though. We don't know in midterm elections what's going to happen, particularly to the House of Representatives in terms of staying Republican. We also don't know in 2020, next presidential election, what will happen. So the political risk might be if I don't act soon on gifting, to your example, then, boy, I mean, if the Democrats came back into power, they could throw out this $11 million. They could bring it down to zero if they wanted to. It doesn't impact a lot of people right now. Even at a $5 million exemption amount, the revenue was never that significant from this estate tax. It's a real political issue.
Yeah, it's a political issue, and there's every indication if they were to regain power, they would eliminate it because they didn't like this in the first place. So that's a risk and may require some planning, as you mentioned, right now. I want to move on to the overhaul of the corporate tax code, which was, where, I guess, what was it, Chris, 75% of the tax benefits went to. The U.S. had the highest corporate tax rates in the world at 35%. They brought them down to 21%. But they also got rid of a few things. They eliminated or reduced interest expense to 30% of adjusted taxable income. That is really going to change corporate financing because I know in our business, we have seen, you know, I'll give you a good example, Intel. They issued a $5 billion bond at 1.6%. They took the money, bought back stock, which was paying 4.25%. So they were playing this arbitrage because the interest expense was deductible. Now there's a limitation on that.
It's a very interesting comment because there has not been a lot of press about this 30% limitation. And it is could potentially very hard hit companies that have used a lot of debt and are going to lose some of the interest deductibility. And it's interesting, the background here is Orrin Hatch, who's chair of Senate Finance, has long argued that it's unfair that companies cannot deduct dividend payments to shareholders. So they raise capital by issuing shares. They cannot deduct the dividend payment, but they can deduct interest on debt, whether that's debt through bond issuances or debt they're just borrowing from a bank or financial institution. So I think hedge funds, private equity funds use a lot of leverage. They could be hit by this. Heavy industrial companies that use a lot of debt could be hit by this. So this is something that you've got to think about when you're doing investing.
I want to move on to what we call subchapter S corporations, which individuals use. It's kind of a pass-through entity. Let's talk about the changes that were made there, but also the limitations.
Yeah, sure. So this is, to me, the most complex part of this entire tax act to get you kind of get your head around this. And what they did was they said, okay, well, you know, if I'm a flow-through entity, like an S-corp, why wouldn't I want to be a C-corp? Because the profits are going to be taxed to me potentially 37% on my individual return. But if I'm a C-corp, the profits are taxed at 21% at the corporate level. So they came up with, in a way, a compromise, and they're saying, okay, if you're a flow-through business, there's a 20% deduction. It's not a deduction at the entity corporate level. It's a deduction at the individual owner level on your own individual tax return. So a very simple example would be, Jim, if you and I had a manufacturing business and we each owned it 50-50, and the profits are $200,000, 100 to me, 100 to you, I'm going to get on my return $100,000 times 20%. I'm going to get a $20,000 deduction. Brand new. I didn't get it last year. I'm still going to get it even if I take the standard amount that we talked about earlier, $24,000, or even if I itemize. Everyone gets that deduction if they qualify for it. So that's a pretty powerful deduction that was not available last year. And there are some really big companies in this country that have passed through entities.
But they begin to phase those out once your income reaches a certain level. So, Chris, why wouldn't I, if I was an S-corp and I unfortunately made enough money that I was beyond those thresholds, why wouldn't I want to convert to a C-corp?
Okay, so let's first back up a step. Let's be clear that the income levels that Jim's referencing are $315,000 or under on a joint return, $157,500 on a single return. Now, here's where they apply. They apply to a service business. So I'm a service business, and I'll just tick them off quickly. Doctors, dentists, lawyers, accountants, financial advisors, professional athletes, consultants. Those are all service businesses. Then I have to stay under 315 or 157,500 to get the 20% deduction. Engineers and architects are okay. So then the second part of Jim's point was, well, why wouldn't I want to go C-Corp? You may want to, but typically you don't, because to get money out of a C-Corp after reasonable salary, dividend. Dividend is double taxed. It's non-deductible to the company. It's income to you as the owner. There are certain planning areas where it may make sense, Jim, but generally you don't want to be a C-Corp.
So given all these changes and the fact that they're going to begin to sunset in 2025, Chris, let's talk about things that individuals can do in planning. For example, you know, the tax rates are still 37% in some states like mine, California. The state tax is 13.3, so it seems like tax-free income is very attractive. But also, under this bill, if you are single or if you are married, $38,000 or $77,000 of dividends are tax-free.
Yep, that's the point. Muni bonds you mentioned, you want to pay careful attention to your tax brackets. Another thing I talked earlier about what I call bunching up deductions to get over the $24,000 amount. Clearly, people will rethink second homes because, boy, if I got a first home and a second home, but my property taxes are capped at $10,000, maybe I want to rent that second home out for a while because then the property taxes are deductible against rental income. I'm not dealing with a $10,000 amount. So those are a number of things that are going to come up in planning. Even Jim, the Roth IRA. The tax-free IRA, right? It could make more sense if you believe tax rates are going to be higher, as we've discussed earlier, say in 2026 calendar year.
The other thing that really strikes me about this for those of us that live in the high tax states and high cost of living states like California, New York, New Jersey, and others, Chris, I know I'm seeing it in my own practice about, I would say, almost 20% of many of our clients who are getting ready to retire in California are moving to another state where the cost of living is cheaper, and especially California, where you have high tax rates. So what do you think this will do for individuals getting ready to retire, sell a business? And also, I saw a report in the news the other day, they expect almost 800,000 individuals to exit states, just three states, New Jersey, New York, and California.
Yeah, I mean, I have two quick thoughts. One, I notice this a lot when I go to Austin, Texas. It's booming because Austin, Texas is picking up a lot of people from California, business owners, individuals. So, for that matter, it's Nevada. Out here where I live in the East Coast, I live in Boston, it's Massachusetts or Florida. So we've got a lot of people retiring to Florida because there's two things that are bad about Massachusetts. One is high tax rate, but not as high as yours in California. Ours is around 6%. But secondly, we have an estate tax at the local level. California does not. So there's two good reasons to move out of Massachusetts. New York, Governor Cuomo is very concerned about this issue, and he's thinking about redoing the state New York tax, state income tax, and replacing it with a payroll tax, because New York's losing a lot of people to Florida. And this will continue, I believe, in the future.
You know, it's amazing, as we were discussing the exemption going to $11 million too, which eliminates estate taxes for most people. I think our listeners would be really surprised, Chris, to find out that there are 16 states or more that have estate tax rates as much as 16%, or in the state of Washington, 20%. So it's really the state capital gains tax. And by the way, our own state of California has got a ballot initiative to add estate taxes on estates over $3 million, starting at 12%.
That's interesting. I did not know that, and I often wondered why California hadn't done that previously. And another state where I just came back from was Minnesota. Minnesota's got an estate tax also.
Yeah, in California, if you walk or breathe or fly, they tax it. But so basically, there's still some planning considerations. And I guess one of the biggest reasons to plan, it's got a little bit more complex, especially with tax brackets. You have certain brackets you have to be aware of. Then you have the Obamacare tax brackets. And also, since some of this stuff is going to expire or sunset, you really need to take advantage of the planning opportunities that are available now, whether they're there.
Absolutely. And don't overpay, folks, because you really ought to be thinking now about, all right, what's my 2018 year going to look like? Am I going to have my tax bill reduced? And thus, maybe if you're working, you reduce your withholdings. The withholdings withholding tax being paid to the feds, or if you're paying estimated tax payments, reduce those. You really don't want to get a big refund in April of 2019 because the government will not pay you interest on that refund.
Good sound advice. Well, listen, Chris, as always, I appreciate you coming on the program and updating our listeners. All the best and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, Jim.
That concludes my interview with Chris Hennessy. And once again, if there's anything that I hope you take away from this interview, if you have a large estate or you're dealing with income tax problems, do some planning right now, because at least for this year, for most of you, you'll see probably an 8% average reduction in income taxes. So don't overpay, as Chris mentioned, because the government doesn't pay you any interest if you get a refund next year. The other thing, if you do have a large estate or even a sub-S corporation, you may want to consider talking to your advisor. You can give us a call if you need to, because you need to take advantage while these tax provisions are in place, because in 2025, they're going to start going away. And what that means is, unless Congress changes it, you have lost a lot of your itemized deductions, and then they're going to go back to the higher tax rates. So a lot of planning opportunities, but you must take advantage of them now. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.